Thank you for joining us on NYPD Blue Balls. This is a different episode, something that is very strange if you've listened to every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls, because it's nothing like those. I'm going to be talking to a listener of the show, a friend of the show.
Yes.
Someone who started watching NYPD Blue because of the show.
This is true.
Which I find extremely interesting, and I wanted to talk to him about the show from his perspective. It's my friend Ben. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing quite well, Kirk. How are you?
Fantastic. A couple questions for you. You are doing something with NYPD Blue that Kyle, myself, and even Papa Asher didn't do. You are binging NYPD Blue.
This is true.
Something that we used to watch it when we were younger, week to week, and then it got on Hulu and Amazon. I wanted to ask you, first off, what is it like to binge NYPD Blue? What is it like seeing, because it's supposed to be every week.
Right.
And I don't know, because do you, and I should let you answer the question, but do you get the previously on NYPD Blues when you start watching them, or no?
No, there is no previously beforehand. You just go into the next episode. And even as you watch the Hulu, it will even cut out the intro to it and then go straight into the episode. So it's a continuous stream. So at a certain point, it feels like night and day. So the next day, the next case happens.
Yeah. Which is strange, mostly because there are times even on the show where I tell Kyle, I was like, you got to remember this is a week from now.
Right.
And one thing that NYPD Blue people fans, NYPD Blue heads, they remember the previously on NYPD Blue, kind of right. Previously on Lost. Okay. And you don't even see those anymore.
I don't.
And that's absolutely strange. Do you ever find that you get lost with the episode then? Because it doesn't mention things that happened a season or two ago?
You know, sometimes I do. Sometimes there is that, but for the most part, it just feels like it's a new case, it's a new day. Doesn't feel like there's a lot of tie-in to previous episodes. There are some here and there, but since I binge-watch it, or have seen it within a two-hour span, it comes up like, oh, I remember that from earlier.
Because that's another good question. You've watched, because I'm trying to have this come out as we finish season three, you've watched seasons 1 through 3 in about how much time?
Shoot. I would say maybe 2 months. And that's being generous because there was some time I just couldn't do NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
I just had to break it off with another show here and there. And that's another thing about binge watching. You can go straight, but there are times where you're overloaded. Like, I'm done with Sipowitz's ass for a while. I just need to watch something else.
Which is true. You do get a lot of Sipowitz ass when you shotgun all of them at once.
That's true.
And 2 months, when you're thinking about three seasons of a show that's about 22 episodes minimum a season. So that's 70-some-odd episodes of NYPD Blue in 2 months. Which, that's another question I have for you. Are we going too slow, in your opinion, the show? Because obviously, people are watching it, like, they're not going to stop an episode to listen to our show and then...
Right.
Would you say that we're going too slow? And you can be critical, because we can't change it, because that's how the beast works, but...
Exactly. It's a good recap. I have gone back to listen to the show again, just so I know what is going on. That's kind of how I prepared for even this podcast, was listening to some of the episodes, saying, oh, that happened. That was this face, that was this person here, and that's what happened in this season.
You've watched the first three seasons.
Right.
The first season, Kyle and I spent a lot of time mostly complaining about David Caruso.
And I think that's fair.
Like, that's the question I wanted to ask. Because he was supposed to be, especially if you read True Blue, the show, the book about the first 2.5 seasons, he was supposed to be the poster child for the show, the star of the show.
Right.
Until he kind of pulled bitch fits and then wanted out of the show.
This is true.
As soon as possible. And you kind of answered it. Did you like him at all? Because there are defenders of David Caruso.
You know, I just felt, because before I even watched NYPD Blue, I watched CSI Miami. See him from that more so. Just dry tone, very straight face. I just imagine every episode he's going to put on some sunglasses right before the episode ends or something like that.
And he's also, because I felt like that's one of the things I regret about when we started the show is We started the show at season one, and the only thing my brother and I talk about is, well, we're all just waiting until Jimmy Smith shows up.
Exactly.
Which is kind of sad for David Caruso, but true.
And, I mean, I can see why. Jimmy Smith has brought so much, almost a life to the NYPD Blue. It's not about who's he going to be sleeping with, because for the first season, all I see is all these girls throwing themselves on David Caruso. It's like, oh, I want to be him. And then one of them kills someone for him, and I didn't understand the whole first season because, like, the obsession with the ginger.
Yeah, I didn't. He's also, it's not even that he's sleeping around as much as there's episodes where he's with this LaCalce, if I remember. Yes. Yeah, that's the name. He's with LaCalce and they're kind of getting together. Then he finds out she did this crime, and then he just goes over to his wife's house and has sex with her.
Yeah.
And then comes back and talks to LaCalce, like, in TV time a week later.
Right.
Which is like, really? Like, this is your star? This is your main actor? Exactly. This is what he does? And
also, if I may interject, even the fact that they kept his ex-wife as kind of a big role in the first season, I felt was kind of interesting, because is she coming back as a love interest? Is she going to be a mainstay character? I didn't know what was going on.
And it's, and especially, that's one of the things that I felt, when I say I regret our show, is they're obviously trying to build something with David Caruso, even though he doesn't want to be there.
Right.
So that when he leaves, like, there's a lot, like, we got some comments on the show, people were like, oh, you're too hard on David Caruso. At the time, he was the best. And it was like, yeah, but, I mean, hindsight is 20/20. Like, we've all seen CSI Miami.
Right.
Some of us have seen, I believe the movie was Kiss of Death, one of the movies he went to go do after getting off NYPD Blue.
Interesting.
The movie's terrible. That movie is a really... That movie has him, Nicolas Cage, Samuel L. Jackson, I think Ving Rhames, and two other pretty known actors, and it is completely confusing and stupid.
Right.
And when I saw it, I was like, I'm so glad he left NYPD Blue and kind of failed.
Right.
In his career. And you would say we didn't go too hard on him?
No. I think there were valid points. I mean, I think one of the things I remembered was Kyle just saying, like, why is everyone just sleeping with Caruso? It's like, is he the only ginger in New York?
Is he also the only, like, single dude in New York? Right. Like, not even just... And he recently divorced.
Exactly.
But everybody's coming to him. And
but then if he's also the only single guy, what does that make Martinez, who is also single?
Yeah,
who,
exactly.
We later on find out has a love interest.
And in the story of the show is younger than we are now. I think he's supposed to be, like, 22.
Interesting.
Which is...
Yeah.
No offense to, I think, Nicholas Turturro, but sometimes that happens with football players where I see him and I was like, wow, that guy. And like, that guy's 6 years younger than you. And you're like, oh, shit.
Right.
I've done nothing with my life. Right. No, the flying James Martinez, he's an attractive dude.
He is.
With season one, it's really also the beginning of what... At least I say, and Kyle, I think, would agree. It's the beginning of Sipowicz. It's the beginning of one of the coolest characters in TV, because he's extremely flawed.
Right.
He's not a super attractive dude. He's not the best dude to be a cop, but he's also very real, kind of grounded.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure it was a Jesse Pinkman situation where they wanted to kill him in the first episode.
Right.
But because he was so popular, they kept him around, and he became one of the most, if not the most important part of the show. Do you think it was... Well, I mean, I think we gave him a lot of credit in the first season. Do you think at least David Caruso helped with that dynamic? With, like, because them working together, it was like, oh, without David Caruso, we wouldn't have Sipowicz around.
Right.
He was like, oh.
Right.
He was his buddy and keeping him up, but it was like... It could have been anybody else, and we would have been happy with them. I don't know.
Right. You know, that's kind of a hard position, because I feel like even Jimmy Smith did a really good job kind of balancing out Sipowicz, too.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, even in the last season, where Sipowicz is just a broken man, goes up to Jimmy Smith and says, I want these guys dead.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just shows, like, how impactful he is in his life. And even to have him as his best man in his wedding, too. I feel like Caruso really didn't bring in anything. He's more of a warm body, I feel, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was kind of just there with Sipowicz, but and they were putting a lot of weight on him, and it turns out he's just not that important.
And then also, it's like, all you get from Caruso is all the stories from what happened before, nothing to that point. Because we're starting at, like, the end of the or close to the end of the relationship before Caruso leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, we're going off of first episode to how we're in this first season.
Four episodes into the second season.
Yeah.
Is when he leaves. And behind the scenes of that scenario, some of the creators didn't want Caruso, they wanted Jimmy Smits.
Right.
And then, through the way TV works, they're like, we can't get him, he's on this show, we're going to have to go with David Caruso, he's going to be a hit. And then David Caruso was kind of a baby. There's stories in the book about he only had one flare-up in front of Dennis Franz, who plays Sipowicz. Sipowicz talked to him privately, and it never happened in front of him again.
Right.
Which proves that Dennis Franz is one of the coolest dudes ever. He probably threatened him quite well. Mm-hmm. But one thing I wanted to ask is, as you said, we transition to Jimmy Smits and they transition Caruso out. They do it over four episodes in the second season, which was originally, I think, supposed to be eight.
Right.
When Caruso wanted out just at the end of season one.
Okay.
Do you think they did a good job writing him out?
It kind of felt abrupt.
Yeah.
It was because close to the end of it, you get the end of the what was the case with the mafia?
Lukowski had shot, what's his name? Marino.
Marino, yeah.
And
shot his guys, and then
Another guy took the hit for it. I can't remember his name. He's the guy that's always pissing off Sipowicz.
I forgot,
but it's right there, but it's gone. It's right there, but it's gone.
But anyway, kind of like, they could have transitioned him a little bit earlier on into season one, I feel, because after the end of the case, he could have said, I can't do this anymore, she did this, I can go. And kind of like, it would have felt more of a natural kind of like, he knows his hands are dirty. He could have been left as a corrupt cop or for allowing this to kind of happen, instead of like her coming out to testify and then him, kind of his title being in question and then him being demoted and leaving. It just felt like an arduous process, I feel.
It's also clearly, because they're good writers, like NYPD Blue, they have a good writing team. And then they're told, okay, you have to figure out a way to get this guy out in four episodes.
Right.
And also try to make it impactful because there are people that really love this character. That's something...
I don't know who, but...
That's the thing. That's the weird thing about talking to, like, my dad and reading up about the show. Mm-hmm. There were so many people talking about how great David Caruso was.
Really?
And when, like, me and my brother are going through it for the show, we're just like, man, how is that possible? And I feel like if like with you or it got anybody else to watch the show, every time I say it's like season one, that's the first season of any show. They're figuring it out.
Right.
It's the first season of Always Sunny. It's the first season of
New Girl.
Yeah. They're figuring it out. Like it's gonna take a while, and then they get rid of Caruso, and the show starts to get really good.
Right.
They give them that task, and then they're like, okay, well, we'll write it in, and hopefully it works out, and then we'll bring in Smits, which. Hopefully everything will be fine once he gets there. And I think it did. Pretty sure they got Emmy nominations right after Smits got there.
Yeah.
So, Jimmy Smits comes into season two. Well, obviously the big question, isn't he the greatest?
Yes, he is. Also, I told you, I had a fun fact for this.
Uh-oh.
Fun fact. My dad actually met Jimmy Smits.
What? Where?
At a pigeon show. Because...
What? That's awesome.
Even in real life, Jimmy Smits, he's a big pigeon guy, too.
That's awesome.
So, my dad grew up raising pigeons in his adulthood. And they'd have shows all throughout California and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my dad would go. And Jimmy Smits actually showed up to a couple. Oh, and he's even met Mike Tyson, too.
Oh, because of the pigeons. Oh, that's awesome.
So, and I thought that was interesting. As I watched NYPD Blue, I saw Jimmy Smits with his pigeons. I'm like, oh, that's creative. I like how they brought that in. A little bit of a personal touch.
Yeah, sometimes writers, like good writers, will do that. Dan Harmon talked about that on Community. He would have his writers write about personal experience and then talk to the actors and kind of mesh them together. But that's pretty cool because the way Smits and Sipowicz or Simone and Sipowicz bond is Jimmy Smits raises birds.
Right.
And then kind of because Sipowicz is very, he's very slow to change.
He has fish.
He has fish, which is one of the greatest. I raised fish.
And that was actually one of my favorite parts with him and what's her name?
Sylvia?
Sylvia, on their first date. Mm-hmm. That was the topic of conversation. It's like, oh, fish. I like fish. Oh, then why didn't you order? No, I raise fish.
And fish becomes just a runner of him always taking care of the fish in the squadron, him taking care of the fish at home.
And then the fish dying. And
or when Sylvia just tries to introduce a new fish.
And then he goes all crazy about it.
It's like, you can't introduce new fish to the pond. I'm trying to find the name of that guy because it's bothering me way too much.
Yeah.
Oh, Girardella. Alphonse Girardella.
Yes.
Just because I really liked his character. I thought the guy did a great job.
He did too. And, you know, to be honest, I was kind of hoping for kind of like season-long characters like that. Mm-hmm. Not really mob bosses, but kind of like an overarching arc within the season mm-hmm. to kind of like tie everything together. Like, it doesn't have to be every episode has to say it, but there's some things that tie back into that. And then the final end of the season concludes with it.
Because it's true that as you go on, because there are characters like Joe Pantoliano, who plays, is it Vinny? He was an informant that he shows up randomly.
The shaved head guy, right?
Yeah, he always wears that weird hat and...
Right.
He's always trying to get over on these guys that are giving him money for information.
Right. And wasn't he also in Daredevil as the writer?
I don't know, maybe.
I saw him.
I know that he was a Cypher in The Matrix.
That may be it.
Because one of the things that makes, well, at least in my opinion, NYPD Blue bingeable now is it was made at a time when there was no knowledge that the internet was going to create this ability to watch television shows in a sequence so well.
Yep. He was in Daredevil.
Oh, shit. He's been in a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah. He was a writer in the first Daredevil movie.
Oh, shoot.
The guy that smokes and mm-hmm. drops the lighter is like, hey. No, it was the Daredevil. And you see the flaming bees.
It was made in a time where they had no expectation that it was going to turn into, that like TV itself was going to turn into this like shotgun process where you get a season, you watch all of them. Like, for example, Always Sunny, they're just premiering their new 13th season.
Exactly.
I haven't watched any of it yet because I'm so used to going to Hulu to watch it, which is not there. I'm having it recorded on my dad's DVR so I can watch it because unless I buy FX Plus or whatever it is.
Right.
So one thing NYPD Blue does is it gives you little nuggets here and there of an overarching story, but keeps each episode its own thing.
Right.
So you're never like, oh, if you were dropped into a random episode of NYPD Blue, you can still enjoy it.
Right.
And I think that's what might get lost by the previously on NYPD Blues, because they used to catch people up on just the important information before those episodes went through.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
But, I think it's great if you just... That's the only problem. It's 12 seasons of, like, 22.
It's only 12 seasons.
22 episodes.
That's the problem. It's only 12.
So you can binge watch. It's just going to take you forever, which is why
right.
you're 2 months in.
Exactly. You know. And that's even with, like, a generous break given in the middle.
Mm-hmm. It's not like a 10-episode Stranger Things. Or
right. Or
Castle Rock. I don't know what they're at right now.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, just stupidly, is Jimmy Smith the most beautiful man you've ever seen?
In the show? You know, that's kind of a hard one. That's kind of a hard one.
In the show. Random question. Do you watch any other, like, procedural cop shows before this?
I did watch, like I said, CSI. I binge-watched all of the Las Vegas series. I've seen a couple episodes of Blue Bloods here and there with Tom Selleck.
The Stash.
You gotta go for the Stash.
They're rebooting a show without a Stash.
Oh, interesting.
Magnum P.I.
Oh.
It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
The trailer was on today, this morning, and I saw it, and I was very confused. But
yeah. But other than that, there's been a couple, like even Criminal Minds, I've seen a couple episodes of that, and I would say I can see a lot of the basis for the cop dramas coming from NYPD Blue.
Mm-hmm. Comparing one to the other, or those to NYPD Blue, because obviously they were made after.
Right.
At least CSI, I don't think it was made during.
No,
I don't know how old it is.
I'm pretty sure it's after.
Because I don't really watch any other cop shows. I've watched a little bit of CSI or Law and Order SVU,
mm-hmm.
and a handful of other stuff. But I've really only watched NYPD Blue. And how would you compare it to those shows? Like, if someone were to ask,
right? I would say that a lot of the future shows they use, or the current shows now that after NYPD Blue, they rely, especially CSI, mm-hmm. rely on the CGI kind of, like, here's a thumbprint that we found, and here's a blood sample that we found, or all these things, where this is more of in-your-face cops roughing to get the answer. If anything that I've learned, there's been a lot of roughhouse from the officers to get the information.
Yeah, that brings up a good question. Do you think, especially because this is early NYPD Blue, this is 1994 to 97, right. 98. Do you think it would even be possible to make a show on network TV where the cops hit as many suspects as they do in the show?
That I even questioned that when I was watching this. I was thinking, this is a product of the time.
Like, you could not.
I honestly, if there was even a hand raised to someone, you're going to hear it on the news, especially if it deals with a minority race.
Mm-hmm.
And we even see that nowadays in the media of police brutality of X, Y, and Z reasons
mm-hmm.
because of this. And so I think it'd be harder to gain ground or traction because of that.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle always makes the claim only HBO would ever be able to put this show
right.
the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, and this is the one question, not the one question, I wanted to ask you many questions. This is one of the questions that I wanted to discuss with you. Sipowicz's character has his own issues with race.
Right.
So much so. People like my brother, I have, at some points, some people online who have watched the show, they would say that Sipowicz is just a stone-cold racist.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that he's racist? Or would you say he's prejudiced, like my dad tried to campaign for on the show?
I would say he walks a fine line between the racist and prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
But I would lean more towards prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have family that are first generation here in America.
Mm-hmm.
And they've grown up in the times. And they have been known to say certain phrases that if you say now, you'd say, oh, you're not supposed to say that. That's not mm-hmm. PC. So I would say it's very much of a prejudice, especially when he dropped the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, he didn't go out of his way to say that. He only said that only after it's been said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in that, that was kind of pushing it too. But the fact that he waited till afterwards and he threw it back.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, I know that's kind of a hot topic right there, but I wouldn't say that was a defining moment of being staunchly racist or white supremacist in that matter.
Yeah, because I remember when me and Kyle went back and forth and I talked to Papa Asher, it was... Because there's a lot of things about language.
Right.
The words that are used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing, even if, like, you're doing your own research, if you just, like, listen to comedians talking about using certain words and how it's changed. When Sipowicz uses the N-word in that episode, Backward Jungle, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
He is saying it reflexively to a gentleman who is being very, very obnoxious towards him and the police because they're police officers.
Right.
And they're just trying to get some information. And then he's pushing Sipowicz's buttons directly. And Sipowicz uses the phrase back at him in a way that Sipowicz would do with any person that's giving him trouble.
Right.
The thing that made me super, like, because I remember that episode was coming, and I was like, yeah, he uses the N-word, and we're going to get the four people that talk to us online. Like, we're going to get some people that say, okay, that's racist, or that's not racist.
And, right.
And then you go to the people that say he's not racist, and of course they're Trump supporters. So,
whoa.
it's a fact.
Description, I am not a Trump supporter. I will say that right now.
That happened, and it was, Kyle right. wanted to talk about it directly. It was very a terrible idea. What he said afterward, after he said the N-word, was like looking a dude directly in his face and saying, he basically said, you guys are aggressive because you're black, in the elevator.
Right.
And I was like, that's That's the racist part. Like, that's the part that would make me very uncomfortable. And, of course, that's what I think the show was doing very well, is even if you watch that episode now, the debate isn't, wow, did he use the N-word, which there's still debate there.
Right.
It's, what is the meaning behind him using the N-word versus what he said later to that same guy?
Right. And I think that's even a product of his aggression, of being pushed to that edge. Because he is a cop. He needs to show that he is unwavering to that point. And so I think even when he said that was to kind of show that I'm not going to be pushed. I'm not going to be messed with. Respects the authority that I have in this right now.
He's like, and it's another thing of like product of the time. He's also a very old school cop.
Right.
And when he does say those things and gets into that jam, as they put it, Jimmy Smith's, his wife, so Simone and Sylvia, Arthur Fancy.
Yeah.
All of them say, we don't appreciate this at all.
Right.
He does those things and then people immediately react to it.
Right.
Saying, this isn't acceptable. And then he has to then question, well, why do I do that? Do I really hate these people? And
right.
I think that's kind of an important thing about the show, is because now you watch it now and it's still relevant.
Very much so.
And what I said during that episode is, like, it leaves you room for the idea, like, oh, these people could learn what they're doing is wrong.
Right.
Which is an important part of that argument.
Exactly. And remind me, which stand did you take on that, if he is or not?
I said, if I remember correctly, I said he, at the beginning of the show, could be called racist.
Right.
I think as he goes on and as he keeps running into these situations, especially with Jimmy Smith's,
right.
Because Jimmy Smith checks him with, hey, I know what you said, I just don't appreciate the thoughts and the meaning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that moment there, also the moment where Sylvia tells him, you're not going to be talking to our son about those things.
Right.
I think there is when he's not suddenly not racist or suddenly cured of his racial problems. It's just he's learning, like, oh, this is how it used to be with Vince, right. with Vince and the old boys. I have to change because times are changing.
Exactly. And even kind of like one of the moments, too, I thought was a little bit more prejudiced of him was when they brought in the Spanish-speaking detective. The female.
Yep.
And she's talking to a Hispanic man about what happened and kind of talks him down. And he's getting offended or upset that they're not speaking English. And he even made that to the point, I think he said, why don't you speak a language that we all understand?
And then she just said he's comfortable speaking this language.
Exactly.
And he gave us the information.
Exactly.
A fun fact about that, I think I mentioned it on the show, that female detective is Jimmy Smith's wife at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He just starts to rub up against these situations where he learns, I can't act like this anymore. It's not helpful to me. It's not helpful to the job.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was, I'm trying to remember, the other one that was really big was when he just assumed the restaurant owner, who was Colombian, had drugs
right
in his residence. Like, that was another one where it's like, okay, dude, calm down. Are there any cases from the first three seasons that you can remember? I know it's been over 2 months.
Right.
Were there any, like, cases or storylines that, like, immediately jumped out at you? That you were like, that was really good. That was a really good...
I would say one of the more fascinating ones that I just thought, man, how did they get away with that? Was the decapitation of the professor.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was just incredible. And I was just like, you see a... remind me, do we see the headless corpse there?
You see, if I remember, the way they shot it was they have, like, a sheet over the shoulders, so you don't see the head.
Right.
And then they lift up the sheet, and you see a head with hair on it in his lap.
Right.
So it's okay. You don't see the headless body, but you see, basically, a head in the dude's lap.
Right. And I thought that case was very interesting, because throughout the whole thing, they talk with his mother... And she's so passive about it, like, oh yeah, this happened. But it wasn't until the very end, when they got the killer, and he's proclaiming to be the next coming of Jesus and everything, and she sees him, and then it all kind of, she realizes, oh, my son is dead, kind of thing.
My son was murdered by a crazy person.
Exactly.
Yeah, they do that on the show a lot, where...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, and that'll lead to my next question. I'm trying to think in terms of seasons you haven't seen and seasons that we've already seen. the kind of shit they get away with. Because I think so far we've seen the one where it was a body that was burnt in a chair in a basement.
Owens.
In NYPD Blue.
The first three seasons?
I think so.
I'm trying to remember that one.
Where, because I know Vince was there, where they walk in and they just have a completely blackened corpse that was fused to a leather seat in a basement.
Okay. I'm trying to see if I can remember. That's the thing with binging is they all kind of blend together. Yeah.
The NYPD Blue is good at finding a way to have the gore without showing the gore.
Exactly.
So you don't have to... Because they've mastered it on other shows by kind of mentioning it.
Right.
In passing, but they were really good at staging it. Like, they had the one where a guy cut open a girl and put her organs in the sink.
That's right. I remember that one, too.
And they don't show the organs in the sink, but it's like they just look around and it's like, well, there's her intestines.
Exactly.
Like, whoa, okay.
But before we go on to the next question, I would say another case that, that I would remember wholeheartedly was, I remember texting you about this, was... That it was just a shooting that happened, but Simone went to go talk to the lady that works at this flower like seller, and it wasn't really the case that stuck with me. It was more her kind of infatuation with Simone, and the fact that she comes up later on in a couple episodes was very, very interesting. I just thought, man, that's, you don't see that on TV a lot. You don't see the stalker kind of syndrome.
And it also had nothing to do with what the character did who's being stalked or what they're even talking about. It was just, she was a witness and he talks to her and then she's suddenly just all over him and won't leave him alone.
Well, I mean, it's Jimmy Smits. Wouldn't you be?
I mean, of course. I don't know. I mean, as a man, I'm only halfway in. If I was a woman, I'd just be stalking him all the time.
All the time.
Another question that I had, because we get accused of this a lot. You listen to the show. Do we spoil too much about the future?
You know, I did listen to the most recent episode of episode 21. I remember Kyle bringing this up. And I don't think it spoils too much. It does kind of highlight things. Because, I mean, I think Kyle said it the best, saying, this show's been out for 10 years.
It's true.
If you haven't seen it or haven't had the chance to, anything that's said on there, it shouldn't be a spoiler alert or anything like that. And even some, like, the video game reviews I've seen, or, like, top 10, best, whatever, they'll put a spoiler alert still, but, I mean, come on. If it's a spoiler for Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, you've had your time to play.
That's true.
It's not a...
You've had more than enough time to get through.
Exactly. So, I don't think it does anything bad. I think it forecasts of what happens, because sometimes I'll listen to the episode, forget about it, and then watch a show, and be like, oh... That's what they talked about. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also... I didn't bring this up so I could address directly the spoiler haters. I think it's more of... Our show is very much two dudes talking about a show that they really, really like.
Right.
And the show that we really, really like, we've seen it multiple times. Kyle has seen it way more than I have.
Right.
And sometimes... When you start talking about a show, like if we were to talk about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I mentioned Rickety Cricket.
Ah, Rickety Cricket.
That doesn't necessarily mean you're spoiling all of what Rickety Cricket is.
Exactly. Because, I mean, that character alone, he has a whole, I wouldn't say evolution, but a de-evolution of humanity from where he was to where he is now.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, definitely not that. But if there's some things like, oh, like, later on we're going to get this character... I wouldn't say that's a spoiler. That's more of like a, oh, this is going to happen.
Yeah. And especially with NYPD Blue, which is, it was on 12 years.
Yeah.
On network television. And you know, just by the virtue of how television works.
Right.
Actors come and leave. And some of them, they like write them out through death. They write them out through transfer or whatever. And you can't, there are moments where, and then they use some of the same actors. So when we do, like, famous faces, and we're like, you're going to recognize this guy because he has an entire arc as a different character.
Right.
In, like, two seasons from now. It's something that I don't want to spoil it, but then again, I don't think you're going to... It's not going to ruin your experience.
No, it doesn't at all.
And it, especially because the whole show is just really Sipowicz, like, in terms of the great story.
Yeah, I think you see him evolve as a human. From the beginning of where he was a drunkard, stumbling around, doesn't know what he's doing, to going to AA, to falling off the wagon the first time, was after Sylvia kind of like mentioning the idea of marriage. That's when he got panicked and then went through AA again. And we had the dad from Everybody Loves Raymond on that as his sponsor. Mm-hmm. He gets back on, and then the next time we see him fall off is when his son dies, which is a good reason.
Oh, yeah. That's another question, because I even asked my dad and asked my brother, did the scene where you reveal that Andy Jr. has died, did you get emotional at all?
I didn't get super emotional. I would say that all my preconceived notions of future seasons of him coming up as a regular were just shattered.
Oh, yeah.
Because I kind of thought, okay, he's going to come in as this character, or he'll support in this case, or he's going to be the lead on this case, work with his dad. There could have been some characters, like tension between dad and son, like, you abandoned me kind of thing. But when I saw that all went out the window.
Yeah, because me and Kyle have quote-unquote spoiled it. There are a lot of very shocking deaths in terms of main characters in the show. Right. And the way they do them are very different. Mm-hmm. But Andy Jr.'s was literally, he's working with them and you're like, oh, they're getting back together. It's a great thing. He's got his life back together. He can talk to his son. And then, just as like a part of his job every day, he goes to see a body and it just happens to be his son.
Right.
Which, I remember I got emotional not because I saw Andy. I got emotional when Sipowicz turns around holding his stuff and sees Simone.
Right.
Because, like, there's moments where you have to give bad news to your friend.
Right.
And just the idea of, it's your son. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to tell it. And then he walks over. Like, that part killed me because it was like, I can't imagine telling, like, your coworker or your best friend in these terms.
And I think I couldn't really get the emotions from that because I would say another show stole that from me. Because if you've ever seen How I Met Your Mother, I'm going to say spoiler alerts now.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
He ends up with Robin. The whole show sucks.
Everything's good up until season 9. But there's an episode where Marshall, it's counting down throughout the whole episode that something bad's going to happen. But at the very end, it turns out, like, he's like, hey, I got this great job. Everything's going right for me. And then at the very end, he goes to see his wife, Lily. She's crying and tells him, hey, your dad just died. And just the delivery of his person, her already emotionally wrecked, and him just hugging her and saying, I'm not ready for this. And that one got me a little bit more teary-eyed than Andy Jr. died.
Andy Jr. died. It's also, because Sipowicz is very much a character where he's trying to pick himself up and things just keep punching him downward.
Right.
And Andy Jr. was his son who, if you remember, I mean, you watched it too.
Right.
His son literally showed up one day and was like, I need $200 for my wedding. He's like, you're getting married? He's like, yeah. He's like, what's her name? He's like, oh, you care now?
Exactly. And then he finds out. And he's like, no, this isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to the Marines, was it? Or
I think it was the Air Force.
Air Force. I think it was.
Yeah.
Gets in there, and then the funny thing is, when he gets back, he's like, hey, Dad, I want to talk to you. And Andy thinks, oh, he's going to tell me that he's got a drug problem, or he's got this. He thinks the worst of it all. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out, hey, I'm joining the police academy. And then you see kind of like that interaction of, here's a new beginning. Here's where we bond.
Mm-hmm. And then the show really takes its time. It spends every last scene of a good couple episodes showing Andy giving him lessons.
Right.
It also does that sweet, like, extended universe thing where they mention the car, which he bought from Mr. Bucci.
Right.
Who was the father of the daughter that he found in the Bucci case, which is season 1. And there was, like, that I remember that moment there with the car. I was like, oh, man, this show was written so well. They, like, took the time to highlight all these things in one moment. They kind of build you up in those last couple episodes of, like, yeah, Andy, you know what? Andy Jr. and Andy are going to be all right. And then it's just, nope, he's gone.
Yeah.
and Andy's off the wagon, and he's just exactly how he was season one. And it's the show's about how, because that's another thing with characters coming and going, and the only one staying being Dennis Franz.
And then also Metaboy. Doesn't he stay?
Yeah, he stays the entire time.
Why does he stay?
Okay, that leads to another good question. The one that I wanted to ask. Are we too hard on Metaboy?
That's kind of a harder one.
Let me rephrase. Is Kyle too hard on Metaboy? Because I don't think I hate on him that much.
I would say Kyle is a little too hard. But I mean, then again, at some degree, he deserves it. Because he's in a relationship, like, he's married, has kids, meets Abinando, and then pretty much one day shows up, hey, we're separating, goes to town at her apartment, she's like, never mind, I'm out, and then he's like, I'll be single for a while, his wife says, let's make this work, and they're trying to make it work, but then he's still living in the loft above the police station, right?
Mm-hmm. In the crib.
Yeah, in the crib, that's right. And that's where we leave him. That's where I see him.
he's very much
to quote his character.
Yeah, he's the little brother of the police force. Like he's the guy that everyone's like, okay, Metaboy, go get the coffee.
More so than even Martinez, who is super young,
and in theory, the most new guy there, but right. Just because of his attitude, he doesn't get treated like Metaboy, who's been there probably as long as Sipowicz has.
Right.
And there are moments where Metaboy proves, like, oh no, he's a pretty good detective.
Right.
But it's just something about his attitude, which is why he stuck around, because he was so good. It's just, you immediately dislike his way of dealing with things.
Right.
And the Abbandando thing was just crazy.
Just that whole thing. And then later on, when he's in the crib, his wife shows up out of nowhere, takes off her trench coat, and then
they just have sex in the crib.
Exactly. And then it's like, okay, cool. We're back to normal, but it's not.
Would you say also, as a new watcher / never seen it before, does NYPD Blue go to the ass shots and the side boob too much as a show? Does it seem like it's just gratuitous? Almost like an HBO show.
Well, you gotta also remember the time of the show, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a later run episode, right?
Oh, yeah. It would run at, I think, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. So, I mean, for the time frame, it makes sense. But being able to binge watch that and seeing all those shots, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm seeing more of the character than I need to. But then again, you do see other things like in Breaking Bad, I would say is a good example. You see some of those kind of body shots too. So for that being on the cable network, I would say was a little risque.
Mm-hmm.
If that was being produced now, I think Kyle was right saying that would be on HBO.
HBO only. It's also, the fact of the matter was a lot of stations in the middle of the country refused to air it. So then bars in Texas, their biggest nights would be the nights they'd play NYPD Blue on their TVs through the satellite stations.
Oh.
And they would charge less for beer and turn up the volume.
Interesting.
And they made crazy deals that night because Texas literally said, you are not allowed to put this on TV.
Interesting.
I would say it's also indicative of the way NYPD Blue is edited, where, especially season one, where there'd be like a moment where they're together in the bedroom, and then like the music changes, and then like the focus changes, and you're like, okay, so we're going to see something.
Even if it's a silhouette, we're going
to
see something.
We're going to see something. Just like anytime they go to action scenes, which nowadays are kind of hilarious compared to other TV show action scenes.
Right.
Now it's slow motion.
Exactly.
they brought out their guns. Everything's moving incredibly slow, and we don't actually see what's going on.
Especially, like, in the gunshots of NYPD Blue. He's got a gun!
And then the scene afterwards where, like, bodies are laying around, and everyone's, like, just kind of, like, looking around and slowly walking. They always did that, and it's one of the few things that doesn't age too well, in my opinion, but it's also
right.
It's a funny part of the show. when it's like, oh, slow motion, someone's going to get shot at.
And dead body.
Thank you once again for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. The second part of Binging with Ben will be out soon. I'd like to thank him again for binging NYPD Blue and listening to the show, and thank you for listening to the show. If you need to binge NYPD Blue, it's on Hulu, it's on Amazon, and there's other shows up there that are almost as good, but not quite. Anyway, if you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, you can check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, on Amazon. It's like 99 cents. Why not get it? There's also True Blue, written by one of the creators and creative advisor who was a former NYPD detective. Thank you for listening again, and if you could please leave a rating and review. I do read the reviews. I can't change much about the show, but I do read the reviews. You can always talk to us on our many social media platforms, mostly just Twitter and Instagram, at Asher Bros Pod, Asher Brothers Podcast. Be good to yourself and each other. Peace.